Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, day guests will be paying more for a day of magic at Disneyland, a magic key has sold out, trams are coming back.
The holidays are spreading throughout the resort, some construction updates, we talk to Lindsay about park planning and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Hello everyone, welcome aboard the DL Weekly podcast. Please lower your head and watch your step while boarding. If this is your first time listening, we hope you'll check out our website at dlweekly.net. If you have more time to spend, becoming an official weekly tier at dlweekly.net/support is an especially good value. Thanks for traveling with us today, and we hope you have a happy and memorable listen to this week's episode.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of October 27th, 2021. I'm Teg Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. We would like to send a shout out and a thank you to both Emily K and Megan A for becoming weekly tiers and supporting the show. This support helps make DL Weekly possible. The weekly tiers in our supporter Discord chat are so amazing. There's always a lively discussion about Disney happening with tips, tricks, direct access to myself and Tag daily, and so much more. All sorts of, we have a parks meetup chat that has had so many fun pictures from around the resort while weekly tiers are there visiting. Super fun. If you would like to become a weekly tier yourself and have some more Disney magic in your day, head on over to dlweekly.net/support to sign up.
Now let's get to the news. Well, it happened again. The prices to enter Disneyland have increased. The only ticket that has not gone up was the one-day, one-park Tier 1 ticket, which remains at $104. All other tickets have gone up $5 for the one-day, one-park Tier 2 ticket to $25 for the Park Hopper tickets. Parking has also increased from $25 to $30 for theme park standard parking and $15 increases for hotel self-park, oversized, and valet parking. Also of note, the Dream Key, which is the highest level magic key, has also halted sales for now.
This, you know, I wasn't very surprised about ticket prices raising because, right, that's unfortunately what happens. I think it's been since at least pre-pandemic since they have raised the ticket prices. So that didn't surprise me. I was more surprised that they raised parking, especially since parking, as everyone knows, has been kind of a bit of a hot topic with the trams not returning yet. So parking prices increasing now just doesn't seem like the best time maybe for Disney to be doing that. I've heard a couple of different things. There's some people speculating that perhaps maybe that increase is then to go back into the trams to get them working and get the cast rehired, retrained, et cetera, et cetera. Other people just are kind of like, well, they don't care. It just is what it is. I'm sure there's maybe the truth is somewhere in between. But the thing that was shocking to me, more so than like the regular parking structure parking increase, was the hotel parking increase. The hotel parking is now $40 a day to park your car.
On top of your $300 to $400 a night at the hotel.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Like beginning, value days or whatever.
Yeah, it's like $400 to $500 to stay at, like, we'll say middle of the road. Because, right, you've got three different hotels. You've got Paradise Pier, the Disneyland Hotel, and then Grand California, which I would say in that order are probably lowest to highest priced. But yeah, $40 a day on top of that is, that's just, wow.
Yeah, that's ridiculous that they have done that. I don't understand, like, $40, like, what is that $40 paying for? Why don't they just raise the hotel, like, price or whatever, and just, like, put it into that and people will, that's easier to understand, I think.
Yeah, well, even so, I don't know. I think at the premium price that you're paying for rooms and really how many people in the hotels are possibly driving and have their cars, I don't think the amount of rooms you have filled versus the amount of parking stalls you have filled, I don't think add up. I don't think too many people are actually parking there. So, because I think a lot of people, right, either flew in or, you know, whatever. They probably don't have their cars there if they're staying at the Disneyland Resort. Any of the Disneyland Resort hotels. I don't know. It seems crazy to me. I'm sure they probably raised it because that's part of the problem is they don't have as many cars parking there. So with fewer cars, they needed to bump the price. But I just, with the premium price you're paying, I just feel like it should be included.
Yeah.
I just really do.
Yeah, I think that's ridiculous, the added price when you're already staying. The other thing, too, that's interesting is they added a tier six for the 1 day one park and the 1 day park hopper. So previously there was tiers 1 through 5. Like we said, tier one stayed at $104, no increase. Tier two now starts at $119, and the tier six for a 1 day one park is $164, where previously the highest cost one was $154, so it's like a $10 difference. And then for the tier six park hopper, for the tier one, it went from $159 to $164, and on the high end, you went from not being available to this new level for $224. So quite a bit of increase. Now, my problem with this is I feel like if Disney didn't want some backlash to this, I mean, people are going to pay anyway, it doesn't really matter, but I think they should have waited till more things came back. Fantasmic coming back, World of Color coming back, a parade coming back, which we'll talk about a little bit later. Something like that, I feel like then it's like worth it. It's like, oh, okay, like there's actually like a normal park experience.
Well, but I guess my thought process on that is I think they waited until now. Because, right, you got to think about the typical person that's buying these tickets. The typical person buying these tickets are like the vacationers.
Yeah.
So they're pre-planning. So, for example, with planning the wedding, all of the guests right now are looking about now-ish. The next couple of months is when they're going to be buying their tickets for the March wedding. I guess we don't know what the parks are going to look like in the spring, early summer. Who knows? We could have Fantasmic by then. We're not going to have World of Color by then. Poor World of Color. I don't know how long that's going to take.
But the thing is the prices went up yesterday as we're recording this, and those things aren't back. So if you are buying a ticket for next week or the holiday season or whatever, you're still not getting all of that.
I don't know. But like I said, I feel the vast majority of people would have already bought their, because especially with reservations now, I think people are being forced to think much further in advance than they were used to doing.
I will say, though, I'm just disappointed, I guess, with it. What do you think about the Dream Key sales being halted for now?
I don't think it's actually sold out. I think that was intentional, because it is awfully suspect to me that the one tier of annual pass or magic keys that included parking was sold out the same day that they increased parking prices.
Sure.
Because really, a lot of people that say maybe have the Believe or the Enchant keys that were getting discounts on their parking, this may have been enough for them to say, you know what, I'm just going to pay the extra because overall it's going to be worthwhile for me to not have to pay, you know, I'm going to save money if I pay extra up front than if I pay parking each time. So I think it was, I think the timing is awfully suspect.
You know what else is interesting? So I saw this as a comment somewhere online. The reason that people are guessing that they raised the price from 25 to 30 is the Believe and Enchant key. No, sorry, the Believe key. Mm-hmm. You get 50% off of parking, and $25 would be an uneven amount of change. Yeah. So 30, even 15, they don't have to deal with quarters and stuff.
Yep.
So I think that's. I mean, it's a silly kind of thing. I'm like, well, then why don't you just raise it to $26 and do 13?
Because then they have. How do I want to say this? Because then you've got ones, so it's easier.
Oh, you're saying that they just have like fives and like 20s or something.
Yeah, like how do I want to say it? It's thinking about how much change and what kind of change. So if it's $26 and 13, then you're always giving four or two ones back per car.
Okay.
So you'd have to have. So I'm thinking it was priced. I mean, $5 is a big hike, but I'm thinking they did that intentionally because of the tills and change.
I mean, that makes sense. It's a good potential possibility of why they were doing that. I do think the other thing, too, is I saw a lot of people who were mad that so the Dream Key has been people keep saying sold out. It's not sold out. They've paused sales of it. Mm-hmm. So it's not something that can sell out. It's not like a physical thing on a shelf somewhere. It's Disney can do whatever. People have been complaining that they can't get days. So I think that they're looking at this and they're probably looking to see how many of each level are reserving certain days.
Oh, that could
and
be
they're
true.
Going, okay, we've got a lot of blocked out days now because people are pre-doing this. So really, it's not a great experience. So maybe we should halt sales of those, let it calm down, see if people redistribute to other keys or whatever when they renew or whatever, and then rejigger their numbers.
Yeah, it would be interesting. Obviously, we're never going to know the behind the scenes of how the whole reservation system works. You know, is it just the magic keys in total all have one bucket of reservations, or does each key have its own bucket?
I think each key has its own bucket.
Or are, like, keys combined? So say is, like, the dream key and the believe key, the top two, are they in the same bucket together? And
then, I gotcha.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They kind of have a mingling of buckets.
That's an interesting way to think about it.
Like I said, unfortunately, we will never know.
That's true.
Well, speaking of parking, early 2022, that is when Disneyland says that the trams from Mickey and Friends and Pixar Pal parking structures are returning. Yay! Disneyland has said that they will begin to conduct maintenance on the trams as well as rehire and train staff for the trams in the next few months.
Well, this is funny because they said Disneyland themselves said they will begin to conduct maintenance, which means they probably looked at it and was like, nope, and left it there. Yeah, and no. I was thinking about this, and I was reading some comments online. I have never, again, I've ridden the trams a lot more than you've ridden the trams, but I realized this. I did not ever think about how many cast members it takes to run the trams, because every tram, let's say they've got five trams in rotation, mm-hmm. you've got a driver, you've got somebody at the back, and then you've got a couple cast members that, like, do loading and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you have cast members that are other places for, like, offloading and all that stuff. So you've got a lot of cast members in between for all of these different things. So, and it doesn't make them money, Disney. Yeah. Like, it's not something that people pay for. It's just part of the experience or whatever. So it'll be interesting to see how far into 2022 this takes. I'm hoping we'll hear more once maintenance starts working on these things, what was going on with them, why it didn't come back, whatever.
I think that's the big question, is how long on the maintenance side of things is it going to take? Because once the trams are up and running, then they can start training new cast members,
right.
Recertifying. Because same thing with what they had to do with all the attractions, right? Everyone, it's been well over a year for these people, so they need to be the leads need to get certified, and then they need to be able to go certify the other people. So there's, you know, kind of this weird domino effect. I will kind of argue a little bit with you. I do think that guests, in a sense, do pay for the tram, because it is supposed to be kind of a complimentary thing that's included with their parking.
Sure.
But from Disney's lens, yes, I agree. It wasn't quite the priority. Obviously, I think it makes sense to me that it was a bigger priority for them to get the monorail running over the trams, just because that's kind of a park attraction, right?
Sure.
Whereas the tram, we will argue that why, yes, it is an attraction, really is just, it's not, you know. So
sure.
In Disney's mind, it's not. I'm just glad that they're returning, because there was a lot of people worried that they weren't going to be returning at all. So, yay for trams.
Yeah. Oh, Lord, Teresa. I apologize in advance. I've got some opinions.
We just got off a happy subject with the trams. You love the trams.
I do love the trams. but here we go, guys. Buckle in. The Disney Parks TikTok accounts teased the return of an old favorite, likely coming back to Disneyland sometime in the future. The Main Street Electrical Parade has been taken out once again from storage and looks to be making a return.
So it was interesting, because we had a bit of a small roller coaster in the chat, because all of a sudden someone's like, well, oh, that was you. Well, maybe it would make sense if it was returning, sure, but going to Walt Disney World, because Walt Disney World turned 50. The Main Street Electrical Parade will also be celebrating the same anniversary soon. Why not? Makes perfect sense. Well, then we kind of watched closer to the TikTok video and then actually read the captions posted by the Disney Parks account.
Hashtag Disneyland.
All signs point to Disneyland, because there's a truck that has Disneyland on it that's pulling into the, like, warehouse. And then, yeah, they actually said, like, I can't remember. Oh, hashtag to be continued, hashtag Disney, hashtag Disney Parks, hashtag Disneyland. So for sure, the Main Street Electrical Parade will be returning to the Disneyland Resort sometime in the future. I have mixed feelings. I do really love the Electrical Parade, but I agree with the rabbit hole tag we'll be going down. I do agree that there are other parades. I know you're going to say Paint the Night, but what happened to Magic Happens? That poor parade.
I keep forgetting about Magic Happens.
I know, because I was only there for like 2 months. I just,
2 months. It was there like 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. It's just sad. Poor Magic Happens. That could be a nighttime parade because when they first had it, it was lit up and looking great.
I have a crazy idea
poor,
for you,
poor,
though.
Poor Magic Happens.
Why don't they do parades like when I used to go as a kid and admission was cheaper and everything, too? And
did
why
they still
don't
have the ticket books?
Why don't they have a daytime parade and a nighttime parade?
We'll get there eventually. However, someone in the chat had a wonderful suggestion, and hopefully we can get this suggestion to somebody that can do something about it. Why not bring back Magic Happens and Paint the Night? Have a nighttime parade in Disneyland. Oh, what'd I say? Magic Happens. Why not bring back the Main Street Electrical Parade as well as Paint the Night and have one in each park? So you have a nighttime parade in Disneyland. That would be, of course, Main Street Electrical Parade. And then have Paint the Night over in DCA. I think that'd be fantastic. But
yeah,
we're not in charge.
Yeah.
I will All say right, I'm am gonna, excited before you get down on your... Well, maybe I'll...
I'm just going to do a small soapbox this time. So here's what I'm going to say. I'm with Teresa. I do enjoy the electrical parade. I don't have anything against the electrical parade. The argument that I have about the electrical parade, first of all, I'm still a little upset, and I think there is a group of people out there that are upset about this, that back in 1996, they said glowing away forever. Mm-hmm. Apparently that doesn't mean... forever, like everybody else does. So that was the first thing. Then they got around that because they brought it back to DCA when DCA was struggling in the early 2000s. But they were like, well, it's not at Disneyland. So it did glow away from Disneyland. And then it went to Disney World for a while. Then it went down Broadway for the Hercules thing. And then I think it went overseas for a time. And then it came back to Disneyland and DCA again. And then back to Disneyland, I think, again. This is just the parade. It's almost at the level of the Christmas Fantasy Parade for me. It's like, it's been done to death. It has been here forever. I do like it, but let it go. Like, let it go off into retirement. You have other parades. You have Magic Happens. You have Paint the Night. Mm-hmm. You have other things. You could put anything. It just drives me crazy because... The reasoning for Paint the Night that I keep seeing online is that they need to do some work with like the costumes and stuff because it's hard on the performers' bodies. I'm totally okay with that. Disney, you're charging a bunch of money extra now. Fix the dang costumes. Bring back Paint the Night. Paint the Night is the successor to the electrical parade. Why would you not bring back something newer to bring back something older? That one. Second, what happened to Magic Happens? Really? Like, it was 2 weeks. They spent all this time and money on these new floats and everything that they heavily promoted, and it hasn't come back yet. So, at least bring back Magic Happens because there wasn't a costume problem. They shouldn't have a problem. They should be able to train people just as easily as they could train for the electrical parade. That's what they should do.
Well, the one thing I will say to end on a happier note, now that Tag is... off his soapbox, is that I'm just happy, honestly, I am just happy that something is coming back. We're going to get like something more than just, we've got the fireworks and the projection shows. Wonderful. We know Poor World of Color is going to
be under
refurbishment for the foreseeable future. We had the Christmas Fantasy Parade. We're going to get the Christmas Fantasy Parade back. We had the Frightfully Fun Parade back. I'm just happy that we're getting more live entertainment in the parks.
Yeah.
If I could pick and choose which ones I wanted, would I? Of course I would. However, there is quite a big part of my heart that's quite happy that one of my favorite parades will probably be going when we're there for the wedding in spring.
So how about
that
this?
That makes my heart
How about
happy.
This? I'll make everybody happy. I am like this, but not with the electrical parade. I will be happy if they bring back Remember Dreams Come True from now until the end of time.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was the best fireworks show they've ever had. So maybe there's people that feel this way, like I do about Remember Dreams Come True, that feel that way about the electrical parade. However, Remember Dreams Come True is like 16 years old. Electric parade's turning 50.
The thing that's crazy to me is just the fact that they did that marketing campaign that, oh, nope, never coming back. So I think Disney kind of shot themselves in the
They just forgot
that.
About it now. At this point, they're like, oh, what are you talking about?
Don't look
A lot
there.
Of people going to the parks now weren't around or don't remember that.
Yeah, oh,
so,
for sure.
For those of you listening, you now know. Anyway, let's move on. Let's get past the parade. I feel like I've exhausted myself today talking about the parade.
Well, in just a couple of weeks, the holiday season will arrive at the resort. And along with it, oh, guess what? We're talking about another parade, the Christmas Fantasy Parade. There was some concern that the parade would be performed for the Christmas party guests only, but that is not the case. The parade will run daily at 3 and 5:30 beginning on November 12th.
I am so glad that this isn't just like locked away behind the Christmas party, because yes. I feel like it is, even though it's, again, another one of those parades that I feel like needs an update or to be replaced or something. It is a time-honored tradition, I guess, to have this as part of the holiday season. And I think locking things like parades behind special ticketed events is not the way to go about it. So
yeah.
As much as I would like something new, I am glad that this is coming back for the season. I also want to point out, we are live streaming this into our Discord, and Deanne did say something that I thought was funny and I wanted to share with the podcast. I would give up the Main Street Electro Parade for People Movers to return.
You know, I think what Disney could have done to be able to keep both the Main Street Electro Parade and the Christmas Fantasy Parade exciting would be if they just every once in a while, I don't know, every couple years, just do some updates to it. Like maybe switch out and add I don't know why.
They did that with the electrical parade.
Yeah, for me, the electrical parade, we could get rid of the fine.
It's my favorite part.
The final float is the part that's just not as exciting to me, because everything else is characters in Disney, and then there's just kind of this
to honor America. Come on, America.
But I feel like that could, like, that kind of feels like one of these things is not like the other.
To me,
it feels out of place to me. So that'd be something that maybe you retire that float. And
did you ever
a new float?
Did you ever see the electrical parade when the Blue Fairy led the electrical parade?
I'm not sure if I did.
Because the front Tinkerbell thing is a new float.
Yeah.
It was used to be the Blue Fairy, which I enjoyed leading the parade.
Yeah.
But they replaced that. With that, they also got rid of a couple floats. They got rid of, there was like a whole, well, I mean, they probably wouldn't have it now anyway, because it's like shows smoking and stuff, but they had like a Pleasure Island float that was really cool. That was part of Pinocchio.
Yep, I have seen that one.
I think I heard that one got damaged in transit or something.
Oh, sure.
And so whatever.
But I just, yeah. Anyways.
You know what I like about the last float? I love the dancers. I like their like little patriotic salute dance thing that they do.
So
I just,
maybe each time they bring it back, you need to then swap a float out. Same
sure.
thing with Christmas Fantasy Parade. Let's get some new stuff in there. Let's keep it fresh. Keep it exciting.
Yeah.
They just, especially Christmas Fantasy Parade, it just feels a little
stale.
Mind you, I have not seen it in person. Maybe it's much. I will give the benefit of the doubt. Perhaps it's much, 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 much more exciting in person. But from what I've seen,
sure.
As far as like videos go, it just.
Do you know what it is?
Feels a little flat.
And I'm sure anybody who's ever seen it knows this. That song is a very short loop.
Oh, yeah.
And that Christmas, that will be in your head for the rest of your trip, I'm telling you. Speaking of Christmas, the Plaza Point Holiday Shop on Main Street has opened to guests. The new shop, which took the place of the Kodak Photo Supply Store at the end of Main Street by the Plaza Inn, opened last week. The new store will feature different holiday merchandise throughout the year, including Halloween, Easter, Lunar New Year, and more. A unique service at this location is the ornament personalization, where cast members can hand paint the ornaments. There is a backstory of the proprietor of the shop as well. It is based on the real mother of Disneyland Resort Enhancement Manager Dawn Papalkin. Evelyn Toro is the character, and she traveled the world to collect the different holiday items.
I think it's so cool. So, right, we got a backstory to the Jungle Cruise, and now we have, I think it's fun that we have a backstory to this new shop. I'm excited. I'm not a big, I know some people are like all Christmas decorations all the time and love like the fact that there are Christmas stores year round. That's not me personally.
Sure.
But I really love the idea of this being a place. I do think it's important at Disney parks to be able to get some of this holiday merchandise year round, because what if you really wanted like your souvenir wanted to be like a Christmas ornament?
That's a big deal for some people.
I think it's important to be able to have access to those things in like July.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I think that it's cool in that sense, but I really, really, really think it's neat that it's going to kind of shift and change depending on the time of year and depending on what holiday is being celebrated. I think that's really, really fun. The other thing that's cool is it sounds to me like it's going to be celebrating, you know, of course, like all the big ones, but also ones that maybe people aren't as familiar with. Like, I don't know.
Kwanzaa?
Yeah. I think that's great because there's not a lot of that representation right now. It's all Christmas, Christmas, Christmas.
Yeah.
And people forget that it's not, that's not the only thing being celebrated at the end of the year. There's all sorts of other holidays. So I think it's great to kind of get some diversity all up in there and get all sorts of different things represented. I think that's great.
We talked about it on last week's episode. There was like a nice hand-painted like sign above the door that they got rid of, and I'm not sure why. It's kind of an odd, because it was there, it was painted, and then they just painted over it. It was very strange.
That made me really sad. I thought that looked great.
It did look great.
And it was the perfect saying where every day is a holiday. I would love to know why that came down.
I don't know either. Do you want to laugh at the most ridiculous online comment that I've seen about this all week or ever, probably? So somebody was commenting, why is Disney, like, you're going to laugh because this is like, this person obviously does not know much about Disney, apparently. They said, why is Disney trying to bring storylines to retail shops? And everybody in the comments on this thing were like, Disney has a story for everything. Because they're like, like, you're trying to buy something. Why does it have to be themed and have a storyline? Not all the other shops have storylines, but like they do.
They do. I don't know if maybe it's as obvious to people that there's different stories. And it maybe hasn't been advertised that this is the shop owner's name and this is the shop owner's backstory.
I like it, though.
I think it's cool. One of our favorites, Kim Irvine, was part of this project.
Yeah. So I think it looks really great. I'm excited to see it myself next time we go.
I'm excited to watch this sounds silly, but I'm really excited to watch the cast members decorating like the ornaments.
Oh, yeah. Well, think about, I love seeing the artistry of some of the cast members. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you've got like the silhouette person's really fascinating to watch. The people who do the glass engraving and stuff, really cool to watch too. The people who do like the hats, I know that's really mechanized now through like their sewing system or whatever. But all of those things where people can practice a craft is kind of cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Halloween is just a few days away from when we are recording this episode, so there still might be time to make some Disney Halloween magic at your house. The Disney Parks blog has posted some templates to carve pumpkins with step-by-step instructions, make a Madame Leota crystal ball, learn to draw the Haunted Mansion, and so much more. Head on over to the link in our show notes for all the spooky details and templates.
So, didn't they did something like this last year, right, during the pandemic, that they were kind of offering some of these things. It looks pretty cool. I mean, for those of you don't know, we did do our public live stream and our hangout this past Sunday, and one of the things we did for our hangout and for part of the just for the hangout, we carve pumpkins because Teresa and Vern have a tradition that they carve a bunch of pumpkins every year, and we carve some Disney pumpkins and stuff. So I love seeing more options here like that, which could be super cool to do at home.
They even have like, maybe we have to try this sometime, Tag. They also have step-by-step directions on how to make Mickey, like a ghost Mickey candy apple.
Ooh.
So we could try making our own park apples at home. I'm sure they're not going to look nearly as beautiful as the ones do at the resort, but
probably not.
That would be fun.
A new experience has come to the Lego store in Downtown Disney. Guests can now build their own custom Lego minifigures. To participate in the experience, guests must make an appointment, then use screens to customize the figure by choosing features such as a head, pants, and torso details. Once the design is complete, it will be 3D printed on-site. The experience is $12 and can be booked at the link in our show notes.
I'm not even a Lego person. I would do this. This sounds so fun. And come on, $12?
Yeah, that's like, not a bad deal.
Not a bad deal at all. What a fun experience. Mm-hmm. We may have to do these next time we're out there because it just sounds fun.
Yeah, and they have a bunch of examples by the kiosk where you can do this that shows all the different like, combinations of things. With Lego, I mean, Lego minifigures are so cool anyway, and I like the fact that whatever you choose, they're going to like custom print it for you. That's super cool.
I think this will be a really fun thing. It's probably going to be super popular, but yeah, I think it's a really great thing. And the thing that's cool about it, the Legos, it's always surprising to me at how popular the Lego store is because a lot of people are there on vacation and you can buy Lego things back home, but it's amazing how many people are drawn to the store, myself included. I think it's because of the giant, like, Lego sculptures. I think they're so cool. But I always just feel like I need to walk through the store. I don't ever buy anything because, like I said, Lego's not my thing. But what a fun experience and fun interactive thing to do.
Every time we go to the Lego store, just for everybody to hear this, I beg Teresa to let the podcast buy the Cinderella Castle or the Disneyland Railroad train, and she's always like, nope. It could be like a bonus episode. We could build it, but you don't like building Legos, right? Is
no,
what you're saying?
No.
What don't you like about building Legos?
Patience.
Oh. And that's me. Like, I'm the one who's impatient.
No. Patience, yeah. I don't have
just takes too long to build it.
Yeah, it takes, yeah, far, far, far too long.
Hmm.
The holidays are starting to show up around the parks, with Halloween still a few days away. The snow has started to fall on Sleeping Beauty Castle as of the end of the week. Lights have started appearing in the trees around the resort. World of Disney has hung some garland and lights, as well as installed some holiday decorations for the displays.
You know what? I was talking to somebody maybe in the chat about this, that I know it takes time to put up all these decorations, mm-hmm. but couldn't they do it because the holiday season doesn't start, until November 12th? That's 12 whole days. Why can't they do this the night of Halloween, start at least the snow on the castle?
So my thought process, so the snow on the castle, as we've seen from some of the behind the scene things, they have to bring in like a crane to get that up. So I think that is time consuming. And it probably,
but does it take 12 days?
Well, it probably has to coordinate with when the people are available to be able to do it, coordinate with the crane people and all sorts of stuff. Because you forget that there's other things possibly going on at night, so they can't always just have a crane parked in front of the castle.
I suppose.
You know? So, and the stuff around the resort, I feel like if they're going to be putting, I understand it's a lot. It's a lot. They do a ton of decorating around the resort. I understand that. So obviously it takes some time. So I'm fine with when they do things that are not as obvious, I guess. So like the lights in the trees.
Yeah.
Not as obvious. Putting the like lights on the facade of Small World.
Yeah, not obvious.
Super obvious. But like the garland, like that's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
So I wish they would wait on stuff like that. I agree with you. I wish they would wait until like November 1st to start putting the snow on the castle. But there's got to be some sort of weird coordination.
I feel like in past years, they've started the holiday season on like the 7th or something. So that's a really short period of time. But this one doesn't start till the 12th. It's almost 2 full weeks after Halloween.
Yeah,
I feel like they should have enough time to do some of those more obvious things during that time.
Yeah.
But if anybody who works at the park knows why this is and has like specific information or something, let us know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some construction updates from around the resort include the work coming to a close on the Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, which is expected to return on November 4th. Pelican's Landing, which is the new seating area for the Harbor Galley by the Haunted Mansion and Splash Mountain, is slowly moving along. The Toontown Walkway is still moving towards completion with the new brickwork. The Fantasyland Theater's entrance marquee is being refurbished, and work continues on the steelwork needed for Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway facade that will hold the mountains of Toontown once the new attraction opens.
So
there's a lot going on.
there's a lot going on. A couple things that are interesting to me that I don't know, like Pelican's Landing, they were working on that when we were there in September, and it wasn't a brand new project then, so it's surprising to me that they're still working on that. That seems to be going slower than I would have thought. Same thing with the walkway, the Toontown Walkway. That's really surprising to me, 'cause it felt like the one side they got done pretty darn quick.
Sure.
So it's interesting that the other side, which is not as large, seems to be taking longer. I'm very curious about the Fantasyland Theater entrance, the sign. I'm really curious what they're doing.
I wonder if
they're
putting a new show in soon.
That's, again, live entertainment. Bring it all back. I'm excited, very excited about that. But
I just wonder with some of these construction things like the Pelican's Landing and the stuff going into Toontown, I wonder if there's... If they have like the same crew and they're maybe doing both things at once, I don't know.
That could be. It is interesting though that Runaway Railway is not supposed to open until 2023 though.
It was 2022. It's like, come on, people.
We have a long way to go until we get to see that Runaway.
That's another thing though. The facade work with the gag factory stuff, it doesn't seem like anything's really made progress there in a few weeks either.
Yeah, they have put up, you can kind of see where the Toontown like hills are going to go.
That part, but I'm saying like the main building.
Yeah, you can see like that's all gone up on the big show building itself. But you're right. Yeah, the entrance of where the theater is going to be has not really seemed to, kind of seems to be halted.
I wonder if they're trying to get rid of the ugly giant building and they're trying to fast track putting the hills up.
That could be.
Yeah. Because right now it does look kind of jarring.
It looks, it's, the crazy thing to me is I didn't realize. So we rode Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway when we were in Walt Disney World back, that was August of 2020. And great, great attraction. Very excited for it to be coming to Disneyland. I think it is more fitting in Disneyland in Toontown.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm very excited. But the thing that's crazy to me is you don't, how big that building is. Like, because you can't, you don't, it was already covered up, right? Because they put the Runaway Railway inside of an existing attraction.
Yeah.
So the facade was already up. Like, you could, the building was already disguised. So you just didn't really get a good idea of what you were looking at there. So it's interesting to see the show building naked, like looming over Toontown. Cause it's just
massive.
It's massive. And when we were on that ride, I didn't feel like the rooms were really that big. So yeah, I'm curious.
Magic.
It is magic. Very magical. Fans of the Muppet Haunted Mansion special on Disney Plus may want to check out one of the folks' Instagram pages that brought the show to life. Jasper Anderson has worked for Jim Henson's Creature Shop for the last several years and worked on bringing the Muppets to the Haunted Mansion. Jasper shares some behind-the-scenes looks about how it all came together.
So this was kind of interesting. His Instagram account, which is linked in our show notes, he does a lot of like cool work anyway that's not even necessarily directly related to this special, but it was neat to look at and see some of the work that they did for this. I thought somebody in one of the comments for, because he built the hat box for the hat box ghost character from the special, and I thought somebody in one of the comments were going to ask about dude's teeth, but no.
They should have. I mean, it wasn't that he had anything to do with that, but they should have asked about the teeth, why Fozzie Bear had teeth. I think this is just fun. The thing that's cool about these is a lot of the stuff that he worked on, I may not, like, how do I want to say this? A lot of the things he worked on was a lot of the details that most people may have missed. And so I think it's really cool to be seeing the up-close photos of his, of these props and of these different things. Like, right, the one I'm looking at right now is the doors to the mansion and like the little squiggly, they almost look like little snakes. Did I notice them in the film? Sure. And even the carvings on the doors. Did I notice them when I watched? Yes, of course I noticed them, but I did not get to see this type of, you know, up closeness and detail on them. So I think it's really cool, really, really cool that they were able to share these images and like all these little details with everyone. Cause like this, I don't know if I noticed, for example, in the stretching room, the candelabras, I don't know if I noticed
that they're Muppets.
That they were Muppets. I think I kind of knew they were Muppets, but I don't know if I knew they looked exactly like that kind of thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, anytime they do anything Muppets, it seems like there is a huge amount of work that goes into it, because everything that would be human or monster-like, they turn into Muppets.
That's the thing that's incredibly impressive to me about these things. Like, okay, for example, I'm embarrassed. I didn't even realize this. 924, the address placard. Did you notice that there was a Muppet at the top of the address placard? I didn't.
Do you know what 924
that.
Is?
Yeah, it's Jim Henson's birthday.
I did not know that until I read this post.
Yep. I did know that.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyways.
Super cool.
Super cool.
Definitely go check it out on Instagram. You don't even, you don't have to have an Instagram account to look at the page. So for those of you who maybe don't have an Instagram account or whatever, you can still look at some cool stuff. Well, with some of the negative press that Disney has been getting recently, from the reservation system to rising ticket prices to sold-out Magic Keys to moving Imagineers to Florida and more, some former Imagineers have been passing around a petition to fire Disney CEO Bob Chapek. As of the time of this recording, the petition has 23,695 signatures. A reminder to our listeners that a petition is not enough to actually fire Chapek, but it does show how unhappy people are with his performance. For those interested, the link to the petition is in the show notes.
I kind of have, this makes me a little bit sad. How do I want to even start this? So I agree. I'm not loving everything that Chapek has been doing. Like, by no means am I on the, like, yay for Chapek fan bus. I'm not there at all. But it just makes me kind of sad because I feel like he's kind of had this really terrible uphill battle his entire time as acting CEO. Tag and I were kind of talking about, you know, how Iger retired, like, right as stuff was kind of hitting the fan. And then here is poor Chapek running around trying to pick up the pieces. So I don't think he's had it easy. So I think that's why I'm sad. I also kind of realized that every time, you know, Disney is really near and dear to our hearts. So we take this stuff very seriously. And we take it personally, too, in instances. And we're very passionate about the parks, about the brand. So if anybody's not going exactly the way, like, it takes a while for us to trust somebody with this because it's very, very near and dear to our hearts. I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like this was kind of how Bob Iger's thing started. I feel like when he first was CEO, mind you, this was several years ago, but I feel like when he first took over as CEO, the fans weren't like, yay, thrilled, shouting from the mountaintops.
Well, it's different.
I think people were not liking what he was doing in the beginning either.
I don't think people were like, so here's where Bob Iger, I think, got away with some things. People were so unhappy with Eisner.
Oh, sure.
And he took over from Eisner. And so it was kind of like, oh, thank goodness Eisner's gone.
Sure.
So Iger, like, was like, well, he's not as bad as Eisner, you know, kind of a thing. Which, by the way, it's very confusing because you have both Bobs now and you had Iger and Eisner. All this craziness. One of the things that is important about the CEO, about the Imagineers with this, actually, is a lot of Imagineers are upset because they are moving a good chunk of the Imagineers to Florida because they're trying to kind of centralize a lot of things in Florida. And actually, the cast member that talked about the new, that did that promotional video for the Jungle Cruise redo, he has left the company because he made a whole Instagram post about how he talked to his wife. They decided they have kids and they have connections and all this stuff. So it didn't make sense to them to move to Florida, but the company was not giving them an option to not move to Florida. So he had to leave the job that he loved and worked hard to get to or whatever. So I could see some frustration that way.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Also, and I do think we need to look forward to this in the future. One part of this petition is trying to say that Josh D'Amaro should take over for Chapek, that he would do a lot better. I do think as long as Josh D'Amaro stays with the company, I think when Chapek leaves, under whatever circumstances, Josh D'Amaro will be the next CEO.
Yeah.
The thing is I feel like we kind of had situations like that. I don't remember if it was with Disney or some other company I was looking at. It might have been Apple, too, where I think it was Disney, that there was somebody in line of succession and something happened and then that person was passed over for someone else. So I hope that doesn't happen to Josh D'Amaro.
I don't foresee that happening.
But in Bob Chapek's defense, I feel like he was handed a ticking time bomb and Iger was like, oh, I'm going to protect the last few minutes of my legacy. Here you go. And so it has been tough for him. Do I like some of the decisions that have been made since he's taken over? No. Are some of those decisions before he left? Iger was still in charge when they announced the Genie program that everybody's all up in arms about.
Yep, that's true.
You know, so I think that there's some things that can be done better. I think things will change over time. A petition like this, I don't think will do anything. I don't think it's going to force Chapek out of the company or anything like that. I do think that maybe it will notify shareholders or whoever that people are dissatisfied with what's happening with the company and maybe might influence some decisions later on down the road.
That could be.
But I don't think it's going to force him out of the position.
Yeah.
Because, honestly, a lot of people like on Wall Street and the stock market and stuff, they're not like crazy Disney fans. They're just trying to invest in a company that's going to be a good return on their investment. And all the stuff that's happening right now is not good for guests, but is great for the bottom line.
Yeah, that's it. It's always hard to take the step back and remember that, yes, Disney is a business. So somebody has to be looking at it, you know, from the business side as well as the creative side. So that's why in the past we had Walt, who had his Roy. So you had the creative side, you had the financial side.
Yep.
We had, what am I trying to say?
Frank Eisner, Wells and Eisner.
Yep, Eisner and Wells. You had the balance there. in more recent years, I don't feel like we have quite the balance. We may be getting it, depending. I feel like Josh tomorrow is kind of more of the Walt, kind of more of the Eisner, kind of the more of the, like, hands-on personality.
He gets Disney from a guest perspective.
Yeah. So I feel like that's him. And then definitely Bob Chapek has always kind of been the man behind the curtain, the more businessy side of things. That is needed, but again, I'm not agreeing by any means with the decisions that are being made, but I just, there's got to be a balance.
Sure.
And we haven't quite found that yet.
I think it would be really smart for Bob Chapek to make Josh DeMauro the kind of face of the company.
Oh, yeah.
And have him be out there like Eisner, Michael Eisner was, and like Walt was, of like being that face that people can connect with and put a human thing to this corporation that is now massive.
I feel like DeMauro's kind of doing that, because I feel like he's very out there. I mean, remember during the pandemic,
I mean, he's been at the parks,
when they were having to be, you know, letting people go, he was there talking with cast members and checking in with cast members, making sure that they were okay. He was very present during the hard times when everything was shut down and when they were having to make those really tough decisions. But you're right. Yeah, we see him very present for park related things, maybe not as present with non-park related things. Yeah. But then again,
he is the parks person.
So that's kind of his role. So I'm hoping things will level out. Like I said, I just feel bad because I just think, like you said it very well, like he was just handed a very
bad situation,
terrible situation, and I'm sure he's just trying to do his best for the company.
The fact that he hasn't just packed it up and left, because this is a crappy situation, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
and I felt that way about who's the president of Disneyland. He also took over when the parks closed, because Josh DeMauro moved up, right? Wasn't that kind of what happened?
No, Josh DeMauro. No. It was a girl. It was some woman. The president of Disneyland was a woman.
But she left to something else. And then
went into like retail.
Ken Potrock. Yeah. So Ken Potrock, I feel like, is in a similar situation to Chapek, where it was like he was president when the park, after the park closed. Yeah, it was like, here you go.
But I think Ken has kind of, how do I want to say it? Being the CEO, I think you get blamed for everything. Whereas,
I mean, it kind of is your responsibility.
You know, nobody's looking at Ken Potrock saying, why are you increasing the prices of the Disneyland tickets? They're looking at
or even Josh DeMauro.
Yeah, they're
who's out of parks.
We always blame the person on the top for these kinds of things. So who knows who's making the actual, you know, who knows who all is part of these decisions? But for sure, everyone's pointing the blame at one person. So I just feel a little bad.
To end it out, I just want to say, I know it seems like to some people we're in dark times, or we're entering dark times right now for the company, and especially at Disneyland with all these things happening at once and prices going up and getting less for and charging more and all this stuff. But I look at it, we've gone through these cycles with Disneyland before. We had the late 90s when Paul Pressler was making everything merchandise and they weren't maintaining the park at all. And then we got Matt We Met, who kind of turned things around. And so every time we go into one of these, we come out and it ends up being better.
Exactly.
So for all the people who are upset with Disney and upset with Disneyland and everything that's happening right now, I think if we just are patient and wait, it'll come back around just like it always does. And especially with like Bob Chapek, he's already like, he's not old, but like he's up there in age. He's not going to stick around forever. He's going to retire at some point. Josh DeMauro is kind of young. He'll pop into that position at some point, and I think things will be good. So I think we just all have to be patient and remember sometimes Disney and the Disney parks especially go through bad times, and we're, I think, in one of those times right now where a lot of people have that opinion, but we'll come out of it. What do you think? You think so?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I definitely think so. There's always, you know, there's always ebbs and flows. You can't have a high without having a low. So unfortunately, we're on the downhill right now.
Yeah.
hopefully we'll be getting back on the uphill.
The Incredicoaster.
It's like a roller coaster. Yep, exactly. The Disney Conservation Fund, which is committed to saving wildlife and building a global community to protect nature, awarded grants to projects and celebrated some cast members last week. 60 nonprofit organizations received the grants. A few of the cast members that have offered their time and talents to support the fund were highlighted on the Disney Parks blog post. To hear about their experiences and to learn more about the fund and recipients, check out the link in our show notes.
Yeah, so I didn't even, like, I'm sure I've heard of the Disney Conservation Fund at some point.
You 100% have, because we learned about it when we were at...
When you were becoming a wilderness explorer?
Yeah, when we were in the Animal Kingdom. We heard about this. I think it's so cool. And I've also seen it, I've watched too many Disney specials. I can't remember which one I saw it on, but I've seen it on, like, Disney specials, too, about how they do all of these efforts in, like, different countries in different parts of the world to like save different animals and all. It's so cool. I think it's so cool.
So, okay. I'm sorry. Explain to me the Disney Conservation Fund since you know about it and you learned about it.
Basically, it's just that, you know, it's this thing that Disney has set up, and it's basically, I think it started with Animal Kingdom. Now, don't quote me, I'm not the expert on this.
Mm-hmm.
That Wilderness Explorer badge was quite a while ago. But anyways, I think it started with the Animal Kingdom and how important it was to like make sure, yes, we need to take care of our animals here at Disney World, but we need to take care of the animals, you know, on our planet as well. And so they kind of created this. And I think it's great. Oh, nope. Actually, it looks like it started... prior
about the time that they were working on Animal Kingdom.
Yeah, because the Animal Kingdom opened, so this started in 95 and Animal Kingdom opened in 98. So yeah, it started about the same time the Animal Kingdom started. I think it's so cool though.
That's cool. I like that they're doing this. Obviously the Walt Disney Company is large enough that they can do a lot of different things, and mm-hmm. the fact that they use some of the funding and stuff that they have to be able to offer grants and stuff to these things, wonderful. I'm so glad. And the fact that cast members are involved too, and they recognize those cast members.
Well, and the other thing that's cool too is not only is this, you know, stuff that they're focused on outside mm-hmm. of the Disney parks, but a lot of the stuff, and we learned about this when we became wilderness explorers.
You became a wilderness explorer.
Is stuff that they're doing at the parks mm-hmm. to do like to make things better and have less of an impact with the parks. The most basic and most simple thing that they started was with paper straws. The first ever paper straw that I know existed in a Disney
park place
was in Animal Kingdom. Mm. When Animal Kingdom first opened, they did not have plastic
straws. They don't do lids.
They
still don't do lids.
Yep, they had paper straws. However, I will say their paper straws were better paper straws than the ones that we currently have. Mm. I think they had some sort of like wax coating because you could leave it in your drink and it wouldn't get soggy. The ones that we use now get soggy. So they, not the same quality paper straws. But then we were also learning about like all the like food waste and how mm-hmm. they would use turn it into like some biodiesel and biofuels. They've got
smart.
All of the different solar panels and all sorts of stuff. So they're doing all sorts of really cool things at the parks as well as, you know, helping with these other global projects too.
It's an awesome situation they got going there.
Mm-hmm.
Psst, Avast there. It'd be too late to alter course, mateys. And there be trivia questions lurking in every cove, waiting to be answered. Listen close and keep your ready Disney knowledge handy. That be the best way to answer correctly. And mark well me words, mateys. Dead men tell no tales. Here come seeking questions and long-lost Disney information, eh? Sure, you come to the proper place, but keep a weather eye open, mates, and hold on tight with both hands, if you please. There be squalls ahead, and James and Vern waiting for them what don't answer correctly.
Welcome back to Trivia Land, where we're going to have four listener-submitted questions. Well, four questions and a bonus question tonight. Are you ready for them?
As ready as I think we usually are.
Okay, excellent. I had to correct myself there because they're not all listener submitted. That'll make more sense in a second.
Okay.
So, first question, submitted by listener Matthew J. How many ride vehicles does the Astro Orbiter have?
Oh my gosh, that's a great question. How many ride vehicles does the Astro Orbiter have?
I'm trying to envision it.
I don't know why, but 24 is my random gut.
I want to say like 9 or 12, but I'm going to say 12.
12. So you're doing half of what I thought. I said 24.
I don't think there's 24.
I don't know. That's my random gut instinct is 24.
Okay.
12 and 24. Okay. One Disney Channel original movie was released on the anniversary of the park's opening, although several years later. Which movie was that? Oh, this is from producer James.
Producer James.
Do we get multiple choice for this?
How many years after?
Yeah.
I mean, you got to give us some clue on this.
I need the math.
Also, this is not, I mean, it's very, 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 like the distant.
38 years later.
38?
Whatever yes. Cousin of like it being a Disneyland.
Park opened in 55.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, 38. 38 years later.
Okay, hold on. I got to calculate this.
55 plus 38.
1993. What Disney Channel original movies were around
is
in 93?
Is it Halloween themed?
Well, why would it be Halloween themed if it was on July 17th?
Hocus Pocus.
Scream. We saw a trailer for Scream, the new Scream movie. Yeah. It's coming out in January. I'm like, really?
1993 Disney Channel original movie.
I don't remember any from that. I don't know. I remember Brink, but I think that was like 96, 97.
I was 5. I feel like this would have been like a movie I would have should be aware of. I have no idea.
I'm probably wrong. I'm just going to say Brink, because that's the only Disney Channel original movie I remember from that time.
That was Brink? And
Brink.
No idea? Break. Sorry.
No, Brink, like Brink. On the yeah. Brink, yeah.
That's what I said, okay. Cool. Yeah.
See, all the weird movies coming to my mind that I'm thinking were like, oh, nope, that was Nickelodeon. Oh, nope, that was Nickelodeon.
You were Brink a Nickelodeon.
No, idea.
No, I wasn't, but like, I was like, was that Snow Dog one? Oh, no, I think that was a Nickelodeon one.
There's also like, there was one about like a smart house, and there was a lot of Disney Channel original movies, but I don't know any from 93, I don't think.
Okay.
Yeah,
and your third regular question, submitted by listener Elise K. What attraction used to be located near the exit of Pirates of the Caribbean, and what kinds of diversions did it feature?
Is she talking about the Pirate Arcade?
Oh, yeah, it's probably the Pirate Arcade.
That's what I'm going to say, Pirate
and
Arcade.
And what type of, what was the second part?
What kinds of diversions did it feature?
Oh, games. Arcade games, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Pirate Arcade that featured arcade games.
Okay. Final answer?
Yeah.
Alrighty. And your fourth and final regular question, submitted by listener Whitney N. What techniques did X and Buddy do to add an otherworldly effect to the Grim Grinning Ghost score in the Graveyard Showstopper?
This is the second week in a row with a...
To the score?
Yes, the score.
Ooh, I don't know what it's called, but it's a certain type of instrument. It's the one's like, ooh, what the heck is that?
It's I don't
like
know.
It's some sort of electric, like, harp type thing or something.
Are you describing a theremin?
Sure.
That's the musical instrument that was used to make the Doctor Who theme. It's also the Star Trek theme.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
What, the theremin?
Theremin.
That's
it's also
answer.
Played by Sheldon in Big Bang Theory.
Yes, it is.
I've seen people do sound effects similar to that with a, like I know this gonna sound like a saw. Mm-hmm. Yep. Jay in the chat said cowbell.
More cowbell.
Does he have a fever and is the only prescription mo cowbell?
Oh my goodness. All right, what's our bonus?
What's your answer?
Oh, I'm jumping on the theremin
you're
chain.
Jumping on.
Oh, so your answer is the theremin?
Sure. I mean, otherwise, I mean, I could pick like a saw that you could whoop, 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 but a theremin is probably closer to what they actually used.
Okay. Final answer?
Yeah.
All right. And for your bonus question from listener Liberty M, what is the largest single themed land in Disney Parks history?
Ooh, it's going to either be Cars Land or Galaxy's Edge.
I think it's Galaxy's Edge.
Probably is Galaxy's Edge.
And is it in Disneyland or is it in any Disney park?
Largest single themed land in Disney Parks history.
I don't know anything about the overseas parks to know if there's...
I don't know about sizes either.
Larger sizes over there or not. I'm going to stick with my...
Yeah, Galaxy's Edge. Because Galaxy's Edge, I thought that they were making a big deal about being like the largest.
Galaxy's Edge, final answer?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Well, listeners, did you get the right answers listening at home? Do you think Tag and Teresa got the right answers? Stick around until after the discussion topic, and we'll all find out together.
Well, this week for our discussion topic, we are having on another one of our friends from over at Concierge, and we have not had her on before, but she has a bunch of awesome information on her social media, and if you book a trip through her, she's got all of these great guides and stuff that we're going to talk about here in a little bit. But please welcome to the show, Lindsay.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Lindsay, we are so excited to have you on. We've talked with, of course, Eric from Concierge many times. A lot of people for DL Weekly probably very much know the sound of his voice since he always puts together those wonderful D180s. Of course, we've had James and Mike on, so we're very excited to finally have you on with us today. So again, thank you for joining us.
Yes, I'm so glad that now I'm as cool as the other Concierge because I get to be on DL Weekly too.
There you go. Well, we're going to start this by getting to know you a little bit better. And we would like to know what your Disney story is, kind of how you fell in love with the company, the parks, what put you on a path to be a Disney travel planner today.
Yes. So I grew up in Southern California, not too far from Disneyland. And my family and I would go at least once or twice every year. I marched with my marching band at Disneyland in high school, and I got to go there like for grad night when I graduated. There were just always reasons to be heading over to Disneyland. And we actually had some family friends who were Club 33 members. So they would get us into Club 33 a couple times when I was a kid. So that was pretty amazing. Wow. And then after I got married and my husband and I moved to Seattle for his job, my family was still in California though, so we would, you know, come down and visit. And growing up, my family's tradition was to take kids for their first time to Disneyland right before they turned three, because as you know, you're a guest of Mickey until then, so you're free. So once we started having kids, I would, you know, take my kids down right before they turned three and made sure that that tradition continued. And then as my kids got older, you know, we just tried to make it a priority to head down to Disneyland like once a year. And I noticed a lot of my friends in Washington started asking me for Disney advice because a lot of them were planning their first trips ever. They'd never been with kids before. So they started asking me to kind of like give them all my tips and tricks. So I started putting together like these guides where I would just, you know, list out the rides that I thought were best for their kids. And like, these are my favorite places to eat. And this is what you should do. Everybody loved it. So I had a blog. I have three boys. I am a boy mom. So my blog is all about like, you know, raising boys. So I started a little shop on my blog and I started selling these guides just online. It was just sort of like a fun hobby. Long story short, a few years later, I met Mike from Concierge because I actually heard him on a podcast and talking about Concierge, and we were planning a trip. And so I got in touch with him just to see if he could, you know, help me find a better deal on my hotel reservation. And that first phone call, I think we talked for an hour and I told him all about how much I love Disneyland and how I was, you know, planning all my friends' trips and all this stuff. And he eventually offered me a job to come on to Concierge. So I have been an official Disney planner for almost 3 years now.
Wow. What a Disney story.
Yeah. I feel like this happens with a lot of the Concierge. I feel like you guys book through the company and then somehow get wrangled into being vacation planners. I mean, but that's cool, though. I'm glad that everybody gets connected that way, and you can kind of make other families' vacations and everything dreams come true. So what an awesome job, yes. though.
I know. As Mike told me on that first phone call, he said, you know, we can teach people how to be like travel agents, but we can't really teach them like the Disney passion. So that is like what we look for. If you want to be a Disney travel planner, you have to like love Disney.
Makes total sense.
Yeah, I feel like that's the case in a lot of things that, you know, unless you find people that are really interested in it, you know, you're not going to get the level of service and quality and everything that you want to get out of those folks unless they have that passion. So when you go to Disneyland on the first day of a visit, which way do you go? Do you go left towards Adventureland? Do you go through the castle to Fantasyland? Do you go right towards Tomorrowland? Kind of what's your attack plan on that first day?
We are pretty much always West Side people. So we head straight to Adventureland. Some of my kids are a little more nervous about attractions than others. So Jungle Cruise is like pretty much always our first stop just to give everybody a win right off the bat. Like there's nothing scary. It's just a fun ride and to start our day. And then we kind of work our way up the West Side from there.
I mean, I think the West Side is the best side, but that's just my opinion. I know that some people really love Space Mountain and they go towards Tomorrowland, or they have little kids and they go to Fantasyland. But I think that just takes you. There's so many great attractions over there. There's Jungle Cruise, like you said. There's Indiana Jones. There's Pirates. There's the Haunted Mansion. I mean, it's just the place to go for that top quality classic attraction.
Well, but not only that. But I think that's really smart, Lindsay. If you've got kind of, you know, some nervous people with you that maybe aren't so sure what they're getting into or need to kind of work themselves up to get to some of those higher level attractions, that's a great way to do it because you've got a good variety on the West Side, definitely.
Exactly. I also really hate the bottleneck that happens like through Adventureland and New Orleans Square, like as the day goes on. So it's always nice to hit those lands before they get too crowded.
That is very true. It is much more enjoyable at the beginning of the day than it is in the middle of the day. So, Lindsay, if you had to pick just one, now, even though this is a Disneyland podcast, we'll let you pick any from any of the Disney parks, but what is your favorite attraction?
I would have to go with Pirates of the Caribbean because I just feel like that is like so classic Disney and it really engages like everything, you know. It's so immersive, I guess is the word that people love to toss around for that one. Like you feel like you're totally there, you know, you've got the smells and you go by Blue Bayou and it's just like so cool. I love that one. But as a close second, and I don't know if this counts as an attraction, but I have to say Fantasmic is like my ultimate fave. So I know you guys feel me on that one.
Oh yeah. I'm going to count that as an attraction. Why not?
Do you like the current iteration of Fantasmic, or do you like the original iteration of Fantasmic?
Ooh, I'm okay with the current. I mean, I like all versions, but yeah, the new one's fine. That's the one my kids have seen, so that's the one that we like the most, I guess.
There you go. I need to find myself a time machine because I would love to go back and see different pieces of Fantasmic of the past. So like, I'd love to see the big Ursula float thing that they had. I really enjoyed Flotsam and Jetsam. Some of the show elements that they had in the past, I wish they would find a way to kind of revive and just plus it even more.
Yeah, I think you'd really enjoy seeing all that from back in the past, especially like Ursula TikTok I think he was still around for a good long time, but and then they did the things with the jet skis with Flotsam and Jetsam, and then like what happened? Like I don't know. It's interesting that they bring things and then they get rid of things, and then
it's always changing. True. Now, Lindsay, since you just recently, well, just within the past couple of years, were at Walt Disney World, and of course we know you love Disneyland. How are you? What do you feel about Pirates Disneyland versus Walt Disney World's versions?
You know, I have to say Disneyland's is so much better. I think just because of the Blue Bayou, you know, I went to Disney World just last year with concierge. We went for a team training and I had been to Disney World before, but it had been a really long time. And so we rode Pirates and I was reminded of like how different it feels when you don't start out through the bayou. You're just kind of like jump right in and there's the Pirates. So I feel like Disneyland has a lot more ambiance because of that.
Well, and not only that, but you know, you get that whole section at Disneyland that you don't get in Disney World, where you're beyond the Blue Bayou, where you've got all the caverns and stuff. There's not a lot of that in Disney World's version. You kind of go around, you go through a small little section, and then you're at the ship battle. And it's very, very different. And then, of course, I don't know if you've ever been to any of the international parks or not, but like the Pirates of the Caribbean that they have in Disneyland Paris is like everything's backwards. So you kind of start, like, it's interesting because you go through the ship battle and stuff like towards the end. It's interesting kind of reversal from the other two in the United States.
Yeah. And then the Shanghai version, that one is just crazy.
Well, that's
so
like
cool.
Not even the same attraction. That's like a totally different thing.
It's still Pirates, though.
I want to start this. We're going to, of course, get into all of your awesome travel planning tips and tricks, especially for like families and big groups, since that's kind of your specialty. But I want to know more about this blog and about how the guides, like, what inspired you really to do that? I know it was, you know, friends asking you advice, but I mean, I have people ask me advice. Never have I thought, never have I thought to write the guides. I think that's so cool that you just did that and put that out there for people.
Yeah, thank you. So after I had my third boy, I kind of took a break from work. I used to work as in freelance in PR and marketing and social media, a lot of that too. And so after I had my third boy, I just kind of took a break from everything and just wanted to, you know, stay home and focus on being a mom for a little bit. But I got a little bored after a little while. So I started my blog just to kind of, you know, talk about like, well, first I started on Instagram, actually, just to connect with other moms of boys, because I'm like the least expected person to end up with all boys. I grew up like very not into sports, like indoorsy, not into roughhousing or anything like that. And then I ended up with all these boys. So I just wanted to connect with other moms of boys and be like, okay, is this normal that they're like wrestling with each other and like jumping off the couch all the time? I started my Instagram first just to kind of connect with other people. But then I just have always loved writing, and I felt like sometimes I had more to say than could fit in an Instagram post. So I started my blog just to talk more about, like, you know, all the books that my boys were loving and different, like, indoor, because we lived in Seattle, so it was hard to burn their energy sometimes when it was really wet outside. So I tried to come up with, you know, fun things to do inside. So I'd write blog posts about that. So anyway, I just had the blog going already, and I thought, hey, I have like all of these tips. I just want to like unload my brain on all my friends. So I just figured out I could write it all out and then share it with them. And then they all started saying like, hey, these are like really helpful. You should give these to anybody. So I'm like, all right, well, I'll put them on my blog. And then
that's amazing.
People started buying them. So it was great.
That's
now,
so cool.
What is your blog? If people want to go check it out, do you still update it? Is it something that you're consistently still doing now that you're also doing travel planning for people?
It is still in existence. And that is how I sell my guides today. Still, they are definitely updated and more robust than they used to be after I've had a couple years of planning for, you know, officially planning for hundreds of families. But my blog is boymomsunite.com, and my Instagram is boymomatdisneyland. So I've got the boy mom info going all over the place. But I don't really update the blog as much as I should, just because I don't have time for it anymore, but the guides are all totally updated. And I do try to post to Instagram pretty frequently, especially like tips for, you know, bringing kids and how to, I guess we'll get into some of this later, but like how to, you know, let your kids burn off some steam while they're in the parks, how to take afternoon breaks, all the things that make your day a little more successful.
Wow.
So I don't think we hit on this at all yet, but so how old are your boys now? Like, what's the age difference between all of them?
My boys are 11, 8, and 4.
That sounds like a lot of energy.
Yeah.
It is. And it's funny because, you know, with my first two, their first trips were like right before they turned 3, like I said. And then, you know, we'd go like maybe once a year after that. But as, I guess my Disney obsession has like reared its head again over the past, I don't know, 6 years or so, even, you know, before I was with Concierge, we were just finding ourselves going to the parks more and more often. And my husband had a work thing like in Anaheim. The month after my youngest boy was born. So I'm, you know, our tradition is to take them when they're a little older and, you know, they sort of recognize characters and all that. But his first trip was when he was 7 weeks old, because I guess wow. That's what happens when you're the third kid and you just get dragged around with the older brothers.
But I mean, if you're going to be in Anaheim, you kind of have to go to Disneyland. So, I mean, you couldn't go to Disneyland.
Exactly. And I have to say, like, I was a little nervous to take him just because he was so little. But I mean, it was a piece of cake because he was still like so sleepy and cuddly. So I just wore him in a wrap the whole day and it was great.
So with, you know, having such different experiences and different ages that you've traveled to the parks with your family with, what is it like to be there with a 7 week old versus now, you know, 11 year olds? How has your park planning and park attack changed throughout the years?
When they were little, I felt like I definitely had to like plan a lot more details, like knowing where the baby care centers are and, you know, packing snacks and figuring out the stroller situation and all of that. But as my boys have gotten older, I'm like just on the edge of being able to, you know, be free at the park. No strollers, don't have to worry about diapers. Like my kids won't melt down quite as quickly if, you know, they're hungry or they have to wait in a long line. So we are definitely evolving, and it's a lot. I mean, it's so fun taking kids at any age. I think I have such good memories of them when they were little, like running to Pluto, you know, so excited to see him. But now that they're a little older, it's just fun in different ways. Cause now they, you know, want to try the fast rides, and they, since we go a lot, they are learning their way around the park. So they've got their favorite things that they have to do. And it's just a lot of fun.
How cute.
Yeah, I can't even imagine trying to go to the parks with that kind of spread of ages, because, you know, between 4 and 11, you're going to get so many different things that they like to do.
Yes, it's true.
Yeah, so how do you kind of balance that during your park days?
Well, one of my favorite tips that I share with all of my clients, too, is when you're thinking about your Disney trip, let every person in your family choose like their must do thing, and whether it's, you know, a ride or a snack or a show, and then just kind of plan your day around that, because I feel like that does a couple things. It gives everybody the chance to feel like they did their special thing, you know, whatever they were most looking forward to, they got it. And then it also kind of takes the pressure off your day, because if, you know, there are five people in my family, we only really need to worry about those five things. And then past that, everything else is like icing on the cake. So you're not feeling like, oh my gosh, we have to run around and hit every single thing here today. It's like, okay, everybody hit their amazing thing that they loved. Now we can just kind of flow through the park and whatever we get to is great.
That is a great way to do it, because you're right. I can see how that would be really like stressful if you didn't do that. And something that I was just reading about recently was, I had to do a presentation about education for something. And one of the things was, if you're like a teacher, like in a room or something, if you develop like the classroom rules with the class, they're more likely to like want to be invested in it and take ownership and abide by all the things. So I feel like this is similar to that, where everybody picks their one thing and then everybody knows like, well, I got my one thing. You know, my brother's got to get his one thing. Mom's got to get her one thing. Dad's got to get his one thing. So like we all are on the same even playing field there. And then everything else is just gravy, I guess, after that.
Yep. Definitely makes things a little easier.
So how does this work? Because I don't know, that sounds like a hard thing for me to pick one thing. So I'm impressed that you and your family can do this. But so does everybody kind of have their go-to things, or do the favorites seem to shift from trip to trip?
I would say in my family, we all kind of pick like the same things. Like there are, you know, a handful of things that we all love. So everybody just kind of stakes their claim. on one of those. But I mean, let's be honest. I say start with those one thing, but then, you know, later in the day, it ends up being like, oh, we got to do Indiana Jones because I love that one. And then, you know, we've never been on the Mark Twain before. So on our last trip, like we all wanted to check that out. So, I mean, I guess you can expand it. You know, if you've got a whole day or multiple days, then people can choose maybe their top three or whatever.
Well, that makes sense because get through the top ones first, and then okay, then we'll add another
exactly.
layer.
Because
if you just make a list of what are all the things you want to do, you could be there for months.
That's really interesting. I don't know why it didn't pop in my head when we were first talking about this, but yeah, of course, like if you're there multiple days, everybody can pick their thing for like that day, and so you could get through. You know, I'm a 5-day person usually, so I could get through my 5 things that I really want to do. And I like everything at Disneyland, so anything other people pick is just going to be extra for me. But I just want to make sure I get those things. It's almost like getting a fast pass or something for something. It's like, I can only get so many, so I guarantee that I'm going to get on those things. But ultimately, I'm going to get on a bunch of stuff, too. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at your website right now, and you've got some different guides on here. You have a Disneyland planning pack, which I assume is kind of like everything. There's the Disneyland dining guide, which I'm really interested to hear more about. You have a free one on there that people can do for COVID precautions and stuff in the park, which also would be interested to hear about. And then what is this Disneyland family surprise one that you've got?
Okay. So the idea for this one came about when I was a kid because my parents surprised my siblings and I with a trip to Disney World for the 25th anniversary, actually. So right
Ooh,
now, it's Disney World.
The cake, the castle
yes,
cake, right?
The pink cake. Yes. I was there for that. And so right now is Disney World's 50th, you know, anniversary. So it's been fun reliving some of those memories. But anyway, so the way that they told us we were going to Disney World was they made like a big poster that said, you know, it was at Christmas time. They said, you've been really good this year. So how are we going to celebrate? And then we like unrolled this banner that said, you're going to Disney World. And we still talk about it to this day. Like it was such a good surprise, so much fun, such an awesome Christmas present. Actually, as a matter of fact, so I was like 12 at that time and we got it for Christmas and then we were going for spring break in April. And this was pre-internet, of course. So I was just like so pumped to plan our family's trip and bless my parents. They were like, okay, go for it. So my mom got me like a stack of Disney World planning books from a travel agent friend. And I literally spent 4 months planning every single detail of our Disney World trip. So I guess I was like destined to be a travel agent one day.
Wow.
But anyway, so I just have always loved the way that my mom revealed that. So I started thinking like, this would be a good thing for other families to do too. And I like to, you know, dabble in graphic design. So I just put together like this cute little sign, basically a cover sheet that I can customize with families' last names or whatever they want it to say. And then, so I'll customize it and send it to the family. And then along with that, they get a family guide that I've written. It's sort of like an abbreviated version of my other guides. And it just goes land by land, like saying which rides have height requirements, which rides are best for little kids or babies. And then just things to watch out for, like, because I never realized this until I had kids, but some rides are like really loud or some rides are really dark and it freaked my kids out when they were like toddlers and I wasn't really expecting that. So I just kind of, you know, call those things out for families. And also like just a good place to eat in each land. If you've got like a hangry kid, you know, and you're like, okay, we got to get this kid some food. Like here, try Bengal barbecue. This will be a good place for you to stop. And then thank you. My favorite. I also have a sheet in there that it kind of walks you through picking everybody's favorite. It's just like a printable sheet that you can print out. Like, and it says, you know, on this day we're going to, and you circle Disneyland or California Adventure. And then you can write each family member's name. And then they can write down like what their must do attraction is or whatever. And then there's like room at the bottom where you can kind of pencil in like, okay, this is what we're thinking for lunch. This is what we're thinking for dinner. Maybe some snacks that we want to pack just to I mean, maybe this is too type A for some people, but as a planner, I like to really think through things. So I hoped that this would be something that could kind of help families come up with a general plan for their day and then have it go a little smoother.
You mentioned how loud the attractions were. And I just want to do a quick follow-up question with you. Did you notice when you were there recently, did it seem like all of the attractions were louder than they were before? Because I feel like they were.
I feel like they are just always really loud. I haven't noticed them super turned up lately, but yes, I would say I am always shocked at like the volume.
Okay, because when we were there last time, I think I turned to Teresa. Ever since they've reopened from COVID, so we went in July and we went again in September, and I told Teresa, I said, I think that they turned the volume up on all these things because I feel like it's so much louder than the last time we were there. But it also could just be that, like, it had been a long time and COVID times you're sitting at home and it's quieter. And then you get out in the real world and you're like, okay, it's a little loud out here now.
Perhaps they just finally went in and deep cleaned the speakers so it just sounds much louder.
I mean, that is true. That could also be the case.
But yeah, it is. That's how you get immersed. That's a very, yeah, very good way to immerse you is to like block out all the other sounds. And that's all you can hear is the attraction sound.
I just get worried because I feel like I'm pretty hard of hearing anyway. And if I think it's loud, how are people that I perceive to have good hearing? How are they going through these things and not becoming deaf?
Yes. Or kids who are sensitive to things like that. So
that too, definitely. So, I don't want to give away all of your tips and tricks because that's why we have these wonderful planning guides that you put together. But can we just talk a little bit about maybe what some things are that people can find in each, you know, in each different one? So like we kind of talked about the family surprise one. What do you have in the freebie one on here that's about COVID?
Yes. So that is a question that I get probably the most frequently among all my clients. Everybody wants to know, like, what's the latest with COVID guidelines? Mm-hmm. So I just put together like an easy one sheet that just sort of outlines, you know, exactly what to expect, like that you have to make park reservations now. And, you know, they're not spacing you out in the lines anymore, but you do have to wear masks currently indoors. So, and then I think I've got a line in there like, you know, parades are not currently happening in their normal fashion. Just and characters, you can like interact with them, but you can't hug them right now. So just a quick one sheet so that people can like at a glance know exactly what the latest guidelines are.
So you saying something just kind of gave me an idea. So sorry if this is a little left field, but being a mom of younger kids, how do you feel about the new distance social, like socially distant meet and greets with characters? Are you fans of those? Are you wishing that the kids could go hug them again? How do you feel and how do your boys feel about that?
I think it's better than nothing. So I'm happy that they are doing it in this way. And I do think it's fun to interact with the characters in the way that they're doing it right now. And like, more people can, you know, have some time with them because you're all sort of like grouped around. But I do totally miss the one-on-one character stuff just because, like I said, I have such good memories of my boys just running up and like hugging Pluto and Mickey and going to Mickey's house, you know, and walking through the room and then meeting him at the end. I am really looking forward to when we can do that again one day.
I'm hoping that they do some type of a hybrid because I really enjoy... You know, we went with one of our exchange students a couple years ago and he got to meet a lot of the characters and those interactions were wonderful because there was obviously like a little bit of conversation. There was some pictures like together, like that was amazing. And I'm sure for people with small children, like those are priceless memories. But for me as an adult who's seen characters before, I really enjoy being able to kind of walk by and get a picture kind of off to the side without somebody else being in the picture with them or whatever, you know, like I'm photo bombing or like another family's photo bombing my photo or something like that where I feel like people get, you know, you could be walking by and you see a character, you could take a couple pictures and keep going and you don't have to like wait in line for a long time or you know, sometimes photo pass photographers are doing a great job, but they seem sometimes if you're in a hurry or trying to get somewhere that you're like, come on, how many more pictures are you going to take with this family? You know, it's great for that family and for you when you get there, but it's always hard when you're standing in line trying to get somewhere. But I hope they, like I said, I hope they do something that's balanced with it, because I think that there's a place for both types of character interactions. And I hope that Disney sees that there are some people that really enjoy this. But for the kids and the people who want those interactions, those should also be available.
There is something magical seeing like a character take a small child's hand and like walk down Main Street or skip around Fantasyland or, you know, those types of things. I'm with you, Lindsay. I want like that kind of stuff to come back. But I also see where tags come from. I like the idea of not having the, because I just always feel bad that kids have to be patient when they're super excited to go meet their character, that they have to like wait in this line and like not, you know, not just like geek out about it. So I always just am amazed at the kids patiently waiting in line to go meet Mickey or whatever. I'm like, ooh, that's a lot of willpower. Good for you. Good for you, kid.
Yes, definitely. One thing that I've noticed about characters at Disney World, I feel like they do a lot of a better job with character dining. I mean, Disneyland obviously has some good character dining, but Disney World just has like tons of places to choose from. And I think those are a good secret weapon for like getting some good character interaction because they come around, well, you know, pre-COVID, they would come around to your table and kind of chat with you for a little bit, and you could really get, and you, there would be multiple characters walking around. So I think that's a good way that, especially if you have little kids, like you could get a lot of characters in a short amount of time without having to wait in line. And so Disneyland has brought back their character dining, but obviously it's just a little more distant. So that can always be a good option too, if you don't want to, you know, wait in line and do all that.
Well, the difference with the dining too, with characters, like you said, that there's a bunch of characters, so everybody's at different tables, so it doesn't seem like you have to wait as long. Plus, you're distracted by like eating and stuff. So you have to eat anyway. So the fact that there's not a character at your table right now gives you an opportunity to eat. And it's still like productive time. I know that there are people who listen and there's some weekly tiers that we've talked to that really want to make 100, you know, they want 110% out of the park every day. And they want to, you know, every moment needs to be accounted for and something needs to be happening. So that seems to be a good opportunity to kind of fill in those time things like that, and you're not standing in a line or something.
Yep.
So what's to kind of piggyback off what Teresa said, so what's an example of something that's in your dining guide that you have available?
Did you know that I've just been staring at her picture of the Matterhorn macaron?
I have been too. It's sitting to the left of my Zoom window, and I'm like, that looks so good. I just finished eating, so I'm like, oh, that'd be a good dessert.
I was seriously sitting here thinking, why did we not pick one of those up on our last trip? I forgot.
They're a really inexpensive treat.
There's a tip in and of itself, the cover photo for this dining guide.
There you go.
That's why I picked it, because it looks like you can just like reach out and grab it. So this one came about because I get some clients once in a while who like have already, you know, booked a trip a long time ago, or they just prefer to book on their own, but they wanted help figuring out dining reservations. And, I'm always happy to help as much as I can, but I, concierge, we kind of, you know, you have to be a client to get like all of our full planning and guides and everything. it doesn't cost you anything to book through concierge. We just, you know, we do it at no charge, but then once you're our client, then we can, you know, share and help you plan your trip more. So I just wanted something that I could give to these people who were planning on their own and just wanted some advice on dining. So I put together this dining guide. It's got a couple different things in there. There's one that's just about like advanced dining reservations for table service restaurants. I've got, you know, like the tips and tricks for getting into the hard restaurants, like Blue Bayou. I'm looking at you. And then my top 10 favorite table service restaurants in the parks, and like a must try item on each menu. Ooh. And then I've got one that's just about like the fast casual restaurants, the quick service places, where you can mobile order your food. So I've got like a little section in there about how to mobile order. And then just my favorite kind of a more extended version of my favorite places to eat in each land, so that, you know, no matter where you are, there's something good to try. Disneyland does a pretty good job on food, but there are some places where I'm like, I just blew my money on this and it wasn't even that great. So yeah. I just want people to like put their money toward the best possible option.
Well, yeah, that especially if you have a family. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, do you have kind of tips in there for families and maybe families of picky eaters, you know, kind of where they should kind of steer towards when it comes to mealtimes?
Yes. Got some of that. And also like tips on, good snacks to pack and bring with you, because a lot of people don't know that you can bring in your own food and drinks. So, you know, it can be tricky if you're staying in a hotel, but a lot of times people will like Amazon Fresh a delivery of some snacks or some bottled water to their hotel. You can do that too. So I've got just some ideas in there of like good kid-friendly snacks. I like to pack lollipops to like give the kids when you're waiting in line, when they start getting antsy, a lollipop will really calm them down. So just some tips like that. And then I also have a list of like where to get all of the famous treats. So like, you know, where can I find the Matterhorn macaroons? Like I will tell you where to find all that good stuff. Chimichanga, corn on the cob, like the stuff that's not quite as, you know, well known.
The stuff that is in a churro and you can find, you could almost like fall into a churro cart if you.
Or popcorn.
Yes, or popcorn. Yeah.
Those things however, seem to be like everywhere.
Those carts, like, I feel like I see a million of them when I don't want a churro or popcorn. But the moment you are like, ooh, you know what sounds good? Somehow there's no carts anywhere near where you're at that moment. It's a funny, weird phenomenon that they've got.
Weren't you? Wasn't that us at the Magic Kingdom? Like, I wanted a churro and we couldn't find a churro.
We had to go searching for a churro at the Magic Kingdom.
We had to go like to the other side of the park from where we were because I was like, I want a churro. And then it wasn't anywhere. Although this was like a month after the parks had reopened, so a lot of stuff wasn't open yet. So, but still,
a couple months. But yeah.
Okay, but still, I totally agree. I was like shocked at Disney World's treat situation. Disneyland really does a better job at that. Like churros were really hard to find. They didn't really have like. I feel like they had like a ton of Rice Krispie treats and caramel apples, but I was like, "Where's the marshmallow wand? Where's like the churro toffee? Like, I want all the Disneyland treats."
Now, you said something a minute ago that I know we're a Disneyland podcast, but I have to ask because you book reservations for people for all the different parks. So I just want to say you were talking about hard to get dining reservations. Do you find in general, like if you had to just combine your knowledge of both coasts, which one does it seem like it's harder to get reservations for? Because I feel like Disney World has a lot of, you know, like Cinderella's table is a really hard to get kind of dining reservation. The Belle's, I can't remember any
Be
of the
Our
names.
Guest.
Like the Be Our Guest is very popular. So I feel like those are harder to get a reservation for than, let's say, Blue Bayou, which is still challenging, but I feel like you have a chance at, where I feel like at Disney World, it's like near impossible.
Yes, I could see how that, I mean, that is very true. However, I will say Disney World just has so much more selection because they've got a lot of really cool restaurants at all the resorts, and it's pretty easy, you know, anybody can go to the resorts and it's easy to get to some of them via monorail or gondola. There are a handful of restaurants that are super hard to book. You have to know like the insider tricks, but I will say like, especially since Disneyland reopened post COVID, it has just felt really hard getting reservations there in general, just because they just don't have as much to choose from. And Disneyland, you know, it's kind of smaller, more compact. So the restaurants aren't as big, there's not as many tables. So right now Disneyland is definitely harder.
So, Lindsay, I mean, I know that you kind of thought maybe that was from COVID and not having maybe as many tables or as many reservations available because we're not back to full operating stuff yet. Do you think I have this weird thing that I just feel like the fact that so many places now require reservations, that it's kind of created this false like sense of demand for reservations and people just like grab them up just in case, whereas before they'd only... they wouldn't do that. I don't know. I feel like we're getting that a little bit with the Magic Key reservations too. I think people like are hoarding reservations in a way, or like panic making these reservations, because there isn't a big, you know, it's not like there's a penalty if you don't do it, because you can, you have a pretty nice window to be able to cancel it without any penalty. So I almost wonder if it's just kind of this like self-fulfilling thing that we're accidentally doing to ourselves.
Yes, I think you're totally onto something, because I have been to Disneyland twice since it reopened, and both times we ate at Rancho del Zocalo. I never know if I'm saying that right, but you know, the Mexican place in Frontierland.
Yeah.
And that place does not do reservations, and it also doesn't do mobile order. And I feel like because of that, it's like this forgotten gem. Like every time we've gone there, the line is super short. There's tons of seating. It's actually a really nice place to sit, because they have like tons of outdoor tables and you can watch Big Thunder go by.
Yeah.
I love that restaurant.
I do too. The food is really good. Like I feel like you can get a lot for your money. And I just feel like it is like this little secret that nobody knows about. But it's probably like you said, Teresa, it's because like, it's not on people's reservation list, so they're not really thinking about it. And it doesn't come up in mobile ordering, so they just forget about it.
You know, I think you actually just like made me think of something too, because I feel like the French Market used to be kind of like Rancho, where it was kind of this like hidden gem, tons of seating. However, they don't have reservations, but it's mobile order now, and it's always packed. It seems like it's always packed over there. So I think we're on to something here.
Well, that's what we were saying
too. Now everybody's going to go get Mexican food, so it's going to be too crowded.
That's what we were saying previously, though, Teresa, about with the boarding groups and stuff for Rise of the Resistance and for Web Slingers, is that because it's such a hard thing to get, everybody tries to get it because you don't want to like miss out on this thing everybody's doing. But then if you take away that, it's not as popular. So, you know, Disney World, you know, Rise is still very popular. It is a great attraction. But we saw with Web Slingers, you know, they got rid of the boarding groups, and it seems like, you know, or they offer standby, and it just seems like it's not as big of a problem because it's not that like hot ticket thing. It's like, oh, we have the option. We can do that later, or we can head over whenever. We don't have to, you know, try to get in there. I'm also wondering, of the people with boarding groups and stuff, because those things don't have a penalty if you don't show up, I'm wondering how many people get a boarding group and don't show up. Like what the thing, you know, because you do it as like an option because you're like, well, we might want to do it, so we have to request it. Teresa, we got that one that day, and it corresponded when we had a dining reservation. We went over there and it must have been down or something because there was a huge influx of people coming in. And we told the cast member, we're like, we have a dining reservation in like 45 minutes. Are we going to be able to do this? She said, go do the dining reservation because there's a penalty if you miss the dining reservation, and then come back and show your boarding group and we'll let you on. Well, by the time we got back, they must have gotten through all the boarding groups for the night because the ride was closed. There was like no cast members out front. Everything was dark. So I assume they got through whatever their boarding groups were, and that was that. So we had come back. It was, I don't know, like 9:30 or something, and we went there, and there was nobody even to show a thing to. So it was like, okay.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's just kind of weird. I mean, they could have just done standby at that point for people, but I don't know. It's just a strange situation. I think that we'll get away from that pretty soon. But between this and reservations, like Teresa was saying, I think people go and sign up for stuff because they want to get it because they're not sure. And that makes like false scarcity. It's kind of like the beginning of the pandemic with toilet paper. Not everybody needed toilet paper, but everybody got afraid that they wouldn't be able to get toilet paper. So everybody went out and got toilet paper. Then we had a scarce problem.
So, Lindsay, before we, you know, I don't want to forget, like, write your travel planner. So you've got to have this wealth of tips and tricks that you can share with some of our listeners. So what are some of your like go-tos or some of your favorites or some that you think would be beneficial for our weekly tiers?
Mornings are like key, as early as you can get. You know, of course, being there for rope drop has always been everyone's goal, but right now more than ever, I think it's really important to do, because until Genie starts at Disneyland, which is the new like fast pass replacement basically, all the rides are standby pretty much except for the virtual queue ones. And so morning time is quiet. You can walk right onto a lot of rides your first couple of hours, and you don't have to deal with, you know, longer lines and things like that. For fireworks, so right now, fireworks with the nighttime spectaculars, those are going on every night, but fireworks are usually only on the weekends. And I always like to tell people, like, if you don't feel like staking out a spot in front of the castle or on Main Street, because it's super crowded, and especially, you know, we're in a pandemic, if you don't feel comfortable being jammed wall to wall with people, I like to watch the nighttime shows by It's a Small World, because yes, it's not as crowded. You still have a great view of the fireworks, and, you know, they do all the same projections and lasers and everything on the facade of It's a Small World. So you still get a really great view and you don't have to wait for a long time.
Those are like the hidden gems right now. Rancho del Zocalo and yes. watching the nighttime spectacular on It's a Small World. The first time we did it was in July, and I was beside myself that there was so much space that everyone could just sit on the ground, and like it was just calm and it was yes. relaxing and it was enjoyable back there. It was very surreal.
It really is. You don't expect it to be like that if you've, you know, staked out a spot on Main Street, like, 2 hours before the show, then, yes. Yes, you'll be very pleasantly surprised.
No, it was wonderful. I'm glad that I let Teresa have us go over there when we were there for Oogie, well, not for Oogie Boogie Bash, but for the Halloween section, because when they were doing just projections, like, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter. You're not missing out on exactly. the castle fireworks or anything like that. I think that's the only thing you miss out with It's a Small World is, you know, on fireworks nights, you're missing things like fire being shot off the castle and some of those fireworks. Yeah. But really, to see the projections, there's not a better place than It's a Small mm-mm. World.
Yeah. So with that, though, we did two nights of the Halloween Screams when we were just there. The one night we did, like, in front of the castle view, so we did get to see Zero go flying up to the castle and flying around the castle. But then, and that was also with the fireworks. And then the other night we did back at Small World, and they had a very cute little, like, they added Zero in. So I almost wonder on other nights when I'm thinking, like, Pixar Fest, when they had, like, the Up House or even just Tinkerbell, if you watch the projection show from Small World, if they incorporate those characters in the projections that aren't actually, like, it's not part of the actual projection show, but they include it back there since you're missing that character flying by the castle.
I like that. Good idea. One other hidden gem for families, especially, is Tom Sawyer Island. I feel like that one kind of gets overlooked, and maybe this is just because I have boys, but that is our favorite hangout in the afternoons. Like, when my kids are starting to get, you know, tired or a little, like, antsy and they just don't want to be waiting in line, we take a raft over there, and they, like, my husband and I will usually get a treat, churro or whatever. And we'll just kind of stake out a spot, like, at one of the tables or the benches, and the boys will just, like, run free. There's caves to explore and, like, bridges and all this cool stuff. And they just have, like, the time of their lives. And I just get to sit and soak up the atmosphere, watch, you know, the Mark Twain go by. It's so much fun. So I always recommend that to families with kids. If you need to, like, take a break, blow off some steam, head over there.
That sounds pretty brilliant because, yeah, that's, I mean, where else can you, like, go exploring and, like, whatever, not running around, but, you know, like, where else can you go do those kinds of things in Disneyland? Because it's wall-to-wall people, but you're right. Tom Sawyer Island is kind of a hidden gem. There is a lot of cool stuff over there, too. Like, there so is. It's not just cool for kids. Like, us adults can go have some fun over there, too. There's kind of, like, a rope coursey type area that has all sorts of, like, weird bridges that you kind of have to, like, balance your way through and all sorts of fun stuff.
Plus, come on, it's so cool to walk on the stage for Fantasmic. That's pretty dang cool.
I mean, there's that too.
Yeah, totally. I know. We always try to spy for Fantasmic stuff, and they do a really good job of hiding.
That's, like, one of the best things about Fantasmic is that during the day, you wouldn't even know that anything happens there. And then at night, it's such a different, the light towers coming out of the ground. I don't know. I love that aspect of it so much. And I feel the same. I feel the complete opposite about Disney World's, because they have, like, a whole auditorium area, the amphitheater that you can go see it in. And it's just not the same. Part of the magic is that it comes out of nowhere.
Totally.
There is something to be said about, like, standing like on the stage, kind of in the spot where Murphy, the dragon, comes up. I just stand there. I'm like, there is Murphy's cave is like however many feet below me right now. Like, that's just crazy. Poor, you know what? Poor Murphy. I just realized Murphy has been just by herself since we shut everything down. She's very lonely down there. That's crazy to think that
considering all the other maintenance issues they're having, I feel like poor Murphy probably can't even get out of his cave right now.
Yeah. That's crazy, though, to think about it. That has just, Murphy's just been chilling underground for over a year.
I mean, in fairness, we don't know if Murphy has come out after park hours.
Oh, yes. Sure. Yes, I see what you're saying. Come out to stretch her wings.
Yeah. I mean, she could be doing all types of cool stuff.
That's true. That's true. Being a mom of three, like we've talked about a couple of times now on the show, what are some of your, do you have any family specific tips aside from Tom Sawyer's Island and picking out your favorite thing? Like, is there any like must do's or like good advice that you have for families maybe taking their first visit together?
Well, I forgot to mention the California Adventure equivalent of Tom Sawyer Island is the Redwood Creek Challenge Trail. That place is pretty awesome too. They've got, I mean, rock climbing walls and slides and all sorts of cool stuff. So that's
that
a good
is a
place.
Really cool area.
Yes, for families over there. Another thing we really like in California Adventure is the Animation Academy, which, I mean, anyone of any age can go and hang out in there and enjoy the air conditioning and, you know, take a break for a little while. But
I think that's one of Teresa's favorite things.
It is. Yeah. Oh, it's magical in there.
I know. I love it too. That's a great place for a break. But have you guys ever done the animation classes in there?
Oh yeah.
My gosh. Yes. I love them so much.
I do too. And my kids especially love them. So that's like something that we always try to do, you know, look at the board of what they're drawing today and the kids can pick, you know, which character they want to learn how to draw.
Honestly, it's such a gem and just something so unexpected for a theme park. I go to like Universal or where SeaWorld or I don't know, wherever else and think, oh, I wonder if I can learn how to draw here. Like, it's just, it's so Disney. I just love it so much.
And they make it so accessible. I feel like everybody does a fairly okay job drawing things.
It's true. And then you get a really cool free souvenir to take home.
Exactly. Exactly.
So that's a fun one. And then also, I just always say, you know, bring snacks. Bring water. You can also get free water from just about any of the fast casual restaurants. Just, you know, try to keep your kids fed and entertained, and your day will go a lot better.
How do you, as a travel planner, feel about the Genie program?
Oh. Like, do I think it's infringing on my business?
I mean, it could be, you can take that question however you want. You can take it as a business thing, or you can take it as just how, like, what you think of the potential for it.
I am cautiously optimistic about it because, as we have learned about other Disney tech things in the past, sometimes it doesn't always work like it's supposed to. I've been eagerly like reading up on how it's working at Disney World because I think it does have a lot of good potential. I think especially the free version, I can't wait to play around with that, where you can, you know, say, show me all the princess things and it'll kind of like give you a plan for your day, highlighting, you know, the princess stuff or the villain stuff or the pirates or whatever. The paid version basically, you know, is like a max pass upgrade sort of, or downgrade, depending on how you want to look at it. I'm curious to see how it will affect crowds and stuff. As a travel planner, I think a way for me to really help my clients even more is to like explain how Disney Genie works, help them decide if it's going to be worth it for them, because it is kind of expensive if you are adding it for your whole group, for your whole trip. But you know, depending on your group and your goals, it can be a really great thing. So I'm excited to kind of put it to work and see if it can help my clients or if, you know, I can explain different hacks and ways to use it better.
I like that. Cautiously optimistic. That's a good, I feel like that's probably where we're sitting too. Like, we're hopeful, but we're also not sure.
and I think the way you're looking at it is good, because I feel like with all of the technology, mobile ordering, reservations, all of these things, there are tips and tricks to better utilize it. It seems, you know, Disney will present this stuff and this technology as, oh, it's so easy. You just go in and do this and that and everything's magical and you've got this fairy godmother that's just going to make your day beautiful. And then you get in there, you know, even things like boarding groups, you're like, okay, so I've got to go in. And especially the beginning, they've made it better now, but you had to go in, you had to create your group, you had to do all this extra stuff, you had to be there right at 7. There's a lot of things that, you know, if you don't know, you know, we saw multiple people, Teresa and I did, at Disneyland that didn't realize that they had to have a reservation. And they were at the ticket booth going,
breaks my heart.
What do you mean I'm here and can't go in the park? Oh, I need a reservation? Like, it was never like that before. So so I think looking at it that way, that even though this might take some of the planning out of your hands, to be able to utilize it to its fullest extent, I think you'll need like a guiding hand, especially the first couple times you use it. So I think that that'll be where your expertise will come in with that. Plus, being a seasoned planner, you can look at what the Genie program is offering you and know, is that really the best way to do it for the day, or
exactly.
is it not?
Exactly. I know. That's one thing I've thought a lot about. It's like, Disney is still the one creating this. Like, you know, just as right now when you look at the app and they show the wait times and they're not always completely accurate.
Like,
I have some conspiracy theories about why that is. And so I feel like Disney Genie will kind of be the same thing. Like, is it really optimizing your day the best? I don't know. We'll see.
Well, it depends on from whose lens. Is it, you know, is it the best for yes. you, or is it the best for the park, or is it the best for, you know, whatever. One question I do have, though, because I think that sometimes this stuff gets overwhelming and complicated, and like, we like live this stuff, right? We understand what mobile order is. We understand park reservations, all that stuff. How is it for you being a travel planner? And I'm sure you help people plan some of their first vacations to Disney parks, or maybe they haven't been for quite some time. How is that? Is that kind of an obstacle for you, or how does that conversation go when you're trying to kind of teach them the Disney language and how your day is going to operate and all the different tools that you'll need?
Yes. Well, while Tag was talking about, you know, how complicated things are now, I was thinking, that's something we talk about a lot. It's that Disneyland isn't just like on a whim, I think I'll head over to Disneyland. For a lot of families, you know, there's a lot of planning and things mm-hmm. you need to know these days to have like a successful day. So that is, I work with clients who range everything from they've never been to Disneyland before, and they think like Harry Potter is there, which, spoiler alert, he's at Universal Studios. Totally okay if you didn't know that. I mean, you guys know it, but yeah. Ranging to people who have like been past annual pass holders and know the ropes really well, but they're like, oh, you know, post-COVID, I'm nervous, I just want to like talk through this a little bit. Or there's people who are just busy and they're like, all right, Lindsay, you know what I like, this is what I want to happen, just set it up for me, and then we can geek out together right before their trip and make sure that they, you know the latest treats and whatever. But I am always happy to, you know, whatever level the client is at, I will work with them to get them up to speed on like the bare minimum of things they need to know. And then from there, if they're interested, you know, we can get a little deeper into Disney baseball. But I try to, you know, keep up on all the news, and I love mm-hmm. listening to you guys because you make it so easy to keep up on the latest updates. But, you know, I'm the one who's like combing Instagram and Pinterest and reading up on all the latest from the Disney Parks blog and all of that. And I think that's really where a lot of our value as concierges lie, is that, you know, we're saving people a ton of time. You don't have to spend the hours doing the research. I'm doing mm-hmm. this already. And then I can just tell you like what you need to know for your trip.
I mean, it is almost a full-time job. I mean, between, you know, we put out a podcast once a week, and it's Teresa and I spend a lot of time every week finding the news, reading about all of it, distilling it down to something that's easy to talk about on the podcast. And you've got families that are there all the time. So for you, it's you know, you're doing a lot of work, too. You're doing dining reservations and, you know, for Disney. Before Genie and everything, you guys were doing Max Pass reservations, all these different things. And so, you know, the good thing about your job is you get to hear directly from your clients that were in the park that something has changed or something is different or whatever. So that's kind of nice to get that directly from those folks. I mean, we have weekly tiers that are constantly in the park that are telling us stuff, too, which that's really helpful to have, you know, boots on the ground, if you will, in the parks, knowing what today is like as opposed to, you know, when you were there a couple weeks ago or when Teresa and I were there, you know, a month ago.
Yes, definitely. And it also is so fun because it feels like I'm almost there with them sometimes when, you know, I don't live in California anymore. I can't go to Disneyland all the time. Uh-huh. But when I talk with my clients or get them set up for their trip or I'm researching something for them, it's almost as good as being there.
I really love how you said, like, you do all of the hard work of combing through stuff for your clients and like stuff for your families with Disney news and like figuring out, because it really is. It's very overwhelming. If you're not Disney crazy people like the three of us are and not living, breathing and just loving it, finding all this information and digging through, I can't imagine what it would be like to plan a Disney vacation, you know, on your own. I know there's things, you know, there's the internet, there's Pinterest, there's
especially now,
this, that, and the other thing. But man, like it could be incredibly overwhelming. So thank you, Lindsay, and thank you to the concierge for this amazing service that you provide. Lindsay did say that, you know, concierge does this. It doesn't cost you any extra to book your vacation through concierge, which seems crazy, but it's true. So they just, you know, that's just part of how they do it. So you just book through them. They help set up all your reservations. They can help with your hotel reservations, park tickets, all that fun stuff. And it doesn't cost you anything extra. It's just like the same cost as if you do it yourself through Disney. So, I mean, why not? So thank you, Lindsay.
It's also really great because in the unlikely event that something should happen, you have somebody on your side that can help fix any little problems that might crop up if, you know, a reservation didn't get done right or suddenly your ticket disappeared out of your app or something. You've got somebody, you don't have to call Disney directly and wait on hold forever. You could call Lindsay and she'll probably pick up right away and can help you.
And when you call Disney every, you know, and you're waiting on hold forever, you get someone different every time who doesn't, you know, they're not familiar with what's going on. So that's a nice thing too, because I have clients who, you know, they can just text me with a question whenever and I can help them out.
Such an awesome
service.
Oh, well, thank you. I think also, you know, there's nothing sadder than a family going to Disneyland for like maybe the first time or the first time in a long time and just feeling like they missed out on a lot of stuff or leaving feeling like they just, you know, spent a ton of money and just felt stressed out the whole time. Mm-hmm. So that is why I love helping family so much, because this is, you know, you're spending a lot of money. This is an investment in your memories, and I want them to, you know, have a good time and make good memories. So I think that's why, you know, whether you're booking through concierge or you want to, you know, spend a little bit more to get one of my guides, I feel like it really, it enhances the trip enough so that you are kind of guaranteed that you're not just, you know, going to be set up for failure. I don't know.
Yeah. The more knowledge you can get going into it, the more successful you're going to be. And like we've said, I think everybody listening has probably picked up that it's not like it was before. You can't just show up at the gate and buy a ticket in most cases and get in and go eat the Blue Bayou or whatever. You can't just, you know, roll on up to Disneyland and have your perfect day. There is some required planning nowadays. So, well, Lindsay, again, like Teresa said, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We do have one final question for you, and that is, if you could work at Disneyland, what would you do? So the sky's the limit. It could be a made-up job, could be a real job. What would your dream position be at Disneyland?
Oh, man. I just want to, like, live there. I don't think that's not really a job, but, you know, live somewhere. An actual job? I'm with Teresa. I would love to be one of those VIP tour guides in the Plaid. Like when I am there with my family or with my friends, I'm always like spouting off random facts about like the history of the ride and the Imagineer who made this and everything. And they're just like, okay, thanks. Move on. But I think, you know, the VIP tours, they want to hear that kind of stuff. So that would be my dream job.
Yeah, they're paying for it. So Lindsay, for people who have listened to this whole interview and they are really excited about either picking up one of your guides or booking a trip with you to go to any of the Disney places, like you said, Alani or a cruise line, which those are started back up again. And I'm sure that a cruise, especially right now, if you really do want to go, probably does take a lot of planning and there's a lot of things that are different than a normal time. How can people get a hold of you and have you as their travel planner?
Yes. So you can go to my blog to find the guides, boymomsunite.com/Disneyland. You can follow me on Instagram, boymom_@_Disneyland. Or you can just contact me through the concierge.com website, and me or any of my fellow concierge would be happy to help.
Looks like we're coming in for a landing, gang. But please stay listening until trivia comes to a stop. The menus can walk to the nearest exit. Thanks for listening to the 8th Wonder of the World, Dio Weekly.
Well, now it's time to return to Trivia Land, where we can find out if we got anything right. I feel good about at least one of them. Yeah.
At least one?
At least one.
You did better than one. So your first regular round question from listener Matthew J. How many ride vehicles does the Astro Orbiter have? Tag, you said 12. Teresa, you said 24. One of you was right on the money.
Dang.
With 12.
Yeah. I knew it didn't have very many, and I was going to do 9, but then I was like, 9 seems like not, like, way too little. Yeah. But yeah, it has terrible capacity.
Mm-hmm. Woo! And you're...
Good job, Tag. Doesn't sound the same as, good job, Teresa.
You'll have to come up with your own thing.
Yeah.
Your second regular round question, this one thought up by producer James. One Disney Channel original movie was released on the anniversary of the park's opening, however, 38 years later. That movie was, in 1993, Hocus Pocus.
Oh! We're fired.
Because I'm like, well, Hocus Pocus opened in the summer. I should have...
You know, for added emphasis, Teresa, I'm going to just bleep you screaming that in that podcast episode.
No, they're going to think I said something far worse if you bleep it.
Usually you're good at this sixth sense kind of like spider sensey thing.
Well,
no,
what have you said? Hocus Pocus. Said it.
But why didn't you pick it as an answer?
Hocus Pocus.
Wait. No. Hocus Pocus was not a Disney Channel original movie.
No.
Oh, you're
right.
According to the submitted question.
Well, they're wrong because it came out in the movie theater, so it was not a Disney Channel
original
movie.
That is true.
Oh.
That is true.
We're going to have to talk to the person that submitted this question.
Perhaps we're going to, maybe we need to do a
James?
A different
Hold on.
Question.
Hold on.
Are you going to yell at him right
Hold
now?
Hold on. We're gonna go to the source. This will be funny. Speakerphone.
Yeah, released by Walt Disney Pictures.
Hey.
Mm-hmm. Vern is asking your question about the Disney Channel original movie that opened 38 years after Disneyland opened. Okay. Hocus Pocus is not a Disney Channel original movie.
Oh, okay.
That's it?
Sure.
That's all you have to say for your malfeasance?
Sure.
All right. I thought I'd call and figure it out with you, but...
Yeah, I don't know. I came up on a list somewhere.
Okay. All right. Enjoy your evening.
Yep. Bye.
I'm sure he was thrilled at that phone call. Dang.
Oh, it was originally going to be a Disney Channel original movie, but they changed their mind because of the bigger stars that signed on. Okay.
I don't know if that still counts, though, because it's not a Disney Channel original movie still.
Okay. Well, anyway...
Do we need a different question?
No.
Are you going to keep that in there with all the nonsense?
Yeah, I'll put the nonsense in there. That'll make it more exciting.
Your third regular question from listener Elise K. What attraction used to be located near the exit of the Pirates of the Caribbean, and what kinds of diversions did it feature? That attraction was the Pirates Arcade Museum, featuring custom-themed wooden cabinet arcade games.
Good job, Teresa.
Both of you getting that correct.
High five.
I love how this has become a thing.
Do you know why it became a thing? Because I would do something I thought I did really good, and you were, like, distracted, so I was like, good job, Teresa.
So I'm a bad friend and podcast host who was ignoring your
good... No,
you just
get distracted easily, though.
Okay. I think that's both of our problems.
Well, for sure, yeah.
And your fourth regular question from listener Whitney N. What techniques did X and Buddy do to add an otherworldly effect to the Grim Grinning Ghost score in the Graveyard Showstopper? Your guess was they used a theremin. The answers that I was looking for was they detuned the instruments, making everything off-key. And in the final mix, they recorded the music backwards, combining it with the regular music, so you're hearing it both backwards and forwards at the same time.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh my gosh.
So you got an incorrect on that one.
That's okay.
There was no theremin that I'm aware of.
I mean, there should have been.
Yeah.
That's However, cool, if anybody though. Now knows that there was a theremin and wants to send in a correction, that would be very interesting to find out.
I mean,
about.
Now that you say that, that does sound vaguely familiar, but yeah, I definitely didn't remember that enough to...
That makes sense with the off-key, because there are sections in the that section where it does sound like it's a little off.
Makes sense, though.
The music doesn't sound
great. That's super interesting with the whole recorded it and played it back, like the backwards and forwards thing, too. That's crazy.
Yeah. That's cool, though.
And your bonus question tonight from listener Liberty M. What is the largest single-themed land in Disney Parks history? The answer to that? Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, spanning
Good job,
more
Teresa.
Than 14 Ooh. Acres.
Dang.
And for those that need a translation, an acre is a football field. Or the entire inside area of a standard track.
Galaxy's
Edge. Coincidentally, where they put the football fields.
Yes, but I didn't play football.
There's not always a track. There's not always a track with a football field.
When I was running the track, I didn't notice the football field. I was on the track. You can also fit a soccer field inside a track.
You can.
Uh-huh.
So, anyway, that's your answers for tonight. Listeners, how did you do listening at home? How do you feel about how Tegan Teresa did? Do you think you've got some great questions that can really stump them in the future? If you've got that perfect question you've been dying to submit, feel free to do so at trivia@dlweekly.net.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us. And we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.
It's okay if you aren't ready for kids right now. It's okay if you don't want to be a mom now or even ever. It's nobody's decision but yours. But do you know what's not okay? Not knowing how effective your birth control is. Talk to your doctor about effective birth control options so you can make an informed decision. Tap to learn more.